Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Rocío Alvarado was only 11 when her family moved from Ciudad Juárez, Mexico to El Paso, Texas in 1971. Though it was only a short journey across the border, the change in her life was drastic and traumatic. She should have started sixth grade. She was pushed back to fourth. Rocío was placed into an English language development program with other children with developmental needs. Rocío was beaten and tied down by her teachers for being fidgety and not speaking English. She was locked in a closet with the lights turned off. She stopped speaking altogether in class. Rocío carried this trauma with her through adulthood. She studied art at the University of Texas at El Paso, where her sketchings silently depicted her psychological scars. Rocío Alvarado eventually moved to San Antonio, married, and had children. She taught first grade dual language at a San Antonio area elementary school. Rocío died of cancer at age 54 in 2015. The trauma of Rocío's past was not revealed to her family until almost 3 years after her death. Rocío's husband, Dean, discovered a yellow spiral notebook that Rocío used for her classroom notes while studying bilingual education as a 45-year-old student. Among those notes were writings that detailed her childhood abuse, in which she describes herself as a child of hell. In what could seem like an ironic twist, she secretly wrote these notes in a closet, closed off from her family. Rocío Alvarado Lockwood's story was told in a 2019 exhibit of her art curated by her husband. Fronteras highlighted that story then, and we're following up today with another personal reflection. La Flaca Calaca is a one-woman show written and produced by Rocío's daughter, Georgette Maria Mesa. Flaca Calaca was a nickname given to Rocío as a child. The show is an ode to Rocío and is a journey to healing from intergenerational trauma. Mesa says she sees parallels between much of the art her mother created as a young college student in El Paso and the trauma she furiously scribbled in her yellow spiral notebook years later.
And I didn't make this connection all the way until I think I wrote my show. She was making her print work in the 1980s, and we'll never know what was going through Rocío's head at the time that she was making those prints. You know, the assumptions that we make and the connections that we make really are our own, because we'll never be able to really ask her. She didn't really share a lot of those images. We found them in her closet after she passed away with everything else. And it seems like when she went back to school to study bilingual education, which was a dream of hers that she didn't get to manifest until much later in her life, I think that the subject material of going to school, being back in bilingual education, you know, I think all of these things were bringing up all of those memories for her, the difficulty with school, you know, how hard the studies were, the language of English development and all those kinds of things. And I think that my dad told me that because my dad's a journalist, and he knew that my mom struggled with mental health and emotional health. And he was encouraging her, you know, maybe you should try to write it down. And so in this yellow notebook, there are her notes from studying bilingual education, and then it's like full-on autobiography, and then it just goes right back to notes. So you have these kind of splurges of writing that she was doing in this yellow notebook. And what I said in my show was that there was almost a voice trapped in her illustrations. All of the illustrations are kind of very childlike but broken. In her print work, you can see there's a doll that has her mouth rubbed out. And it becomes very clear what that doll is kind of meaning for her when she erased her mouth, and kind of reminiscent of this time where she decided to just zip her lip and not say anything. There's a little doll, a little girl doll, and she has a missing battery. And if you look closely enough, she's got a little wrench in her hand. And you can see, oh, she's trying to fix herself. her brokenness, you know. And when you connect these things, you know, it's like she was trying to say something through her images. And then much later in life, she found the words to be able to tell the stories behind them.
Did you ever see sort of any of her past trauma manifest itself in her behavior?
115%. I was the oldest. I was also the only girl. And I know that my mom and the way that she interacted with women, the competition with her sisters, the expectation of her mother on her. And I just think that a lot of those female relationships really echoed with her relationship with me. I had two other brothers. I think it's because she saw herself in me that she had a very high expectation for me because of the way that she grew up and how far she had come to give me the life that I had. But also, I think that she resented me and she was intimidated by me because of how well I can speak for myself, of all of the qualities that I show that maybe she never had the opportunity to grow for herself. And so we did. We struggled with our relationship growing up. And my mom had, she struggled with her mental health. I use the closet as an as a recurring image.
Because the literal closet.
The literal closet, mm-hmm. Yes. Because she would lock herself in her closet, I mean, for days, studying or who knows what in there. And she had a quick temper. And we did have some violent interactions at home together. And I know that I touch on this in my show, is that in a very similar fashion, I had also become the child of hell. And so it's interesting that when she writes these stories, that we kind of mirror each other's trauma. And that's kind of what I want to explore, how intergenerational trauma kind of echoes from mother to child, and how we begin to break that cycle, which I think is a common theme with Latinx families, trying to understand how we move into a gentle parenting model, right? I think that's definitely a trending theme in parents and especially in Latinx families today.
I'm curious as to why you took her story and developed it into this one-woman show, essentially.
A couple of things happened. My father curated this exhibition, just a visual art gallery exhibition, kind of very separate from me and from my family. It was something that he was doing on his own.
Did he feel like he had to do it for himself?
I think he did have to do it for himself. I also do not think that the children were ready. We just weren't there yet to be able to understand all of what was going to go into this gallery exhibition. And the discovery of the Yellow Notebook as well. The stories in there were very, very dark. They were very, very sad. There was no reckoning that we're going to have with Rocio. I actually think my middle sibling told my dad, Georgette's not ready to see this notebook.
Hmm.
Please don't show it to her yet. And so really my first experience with the Yellow Notebook and with like the extent of the art, some of it I had seen before, but most of it I had not, was really at that art gallery exhibition in 2019. And the story was horrible. It was a horrible past to be sharing, and the terrible treatment of an immigrant child. And it was very heartbreaking. And so there were two things that happened. One was that my first thought was I read a piece of her journal that said something like, I see her pain. I love her. I understand what she does. I want to help. This kind of mantra echoes in her journals. And I thought, gosh, she's saying that about her mom. This is something that I've said about my mom. You know, it's not that she says these horrible or harsh things to me or does these horrible or harsh things because she doesn't love me. I have to see she's coming from a place of pain and a painful past and a high expectation because of where she came from. And so I thought that was very strange. Like, I could have written that about my mom, what she wrote about my abuela. Also, I felt that there was some reckoning to be done between my mom and I, that there needed to be forgiveness on both parts And I wanted to explore that in a one-woman show in the way that the gallery couldn't, because it was more of my father's honoring my mother. Whereas I kind of wanted to dig into the nitty and gritty of our relationship and how intergenerational trauma can begin to cycle in our families. What kind of choices do I get to make in this generation? And for my son's generation, how are we going to break that cycle? Also, we had some curanderos visit our gallery on the closing night. And they told me there, this is all really dark. And we need to bring the light. And so they did a little limpia for me there. I reenact it in my show. But they say, you know, this chapter of darkness is Rocio's darkness, and we are here to bring the light. And so I wanted to really explore the light and the dark of the story, because what really Rocio was doing was she was saying, if I went through all of this, it's best I put it somewhere and share it, and so that we don't have to repeat it. For all of those reasons, a lot of synchronicity, some things from the spiritual world, an interesting interaction with a possible spirit on Dia de los Muertos, all called me, and I didn't have a choice. I absolutely knew that I wanted to make this a solo show, and I did.
Georgette Maria Mesa is a San Antonio educator, actor, and writer. She's written La Flaca Calaca, a one-woman production based on the life of her mother, Rocio Alvarado Lockwood, who experienced childhood abuse and trauma growing up on the El Paso-Juarez border. Still to come, Mesa asked audience members who attended La Flaca Calaca to write their own thoughts in their own yellow notebooks.
People wrote me some very intimate yellow notebook assignments, and so it was received very well. I don't think that there was a dry eye in the house.
Our conversation continues next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Georgette Maria Mesa's one-woman show, La Flaca Calaca, explores the secret life of her late mother, Rocio Alvarado Lockwood, a life that was mostly withheld from her husband and children. The abuse and trauma she suffered became evident in a yellow spiral notebook and artwork discovered almost 3 years after her death. La Flaca Calaca was performed in May at Brick at Blue Star Arts Complex in San Antonio, a performance accompanied by an exhibit of some of Rocio's art.
This is a story about a mother and daughter. This is a story about a secret artist. A story about forgiveness. This is a story about trauma. Trauma from grandmother to mother to daughter. Is that where it stops?
Mesa explains why she titled her show after her mother's colorful drawing of a skinny skeleton.
The Flaca Calaca is a little doodle that my mom started making. My father is a graphic designer, and so he is the one who kind of helped her make this yellow and pink kind of stock image that you see today, the iconic image of Flaca. But it was a little doodle that she did. And then my dad helped her kind of publish it digitally, and it was for her classroom. So she had a bilingual education classroom in Somerset Elementary. She had a little sing song to go with it. So it was, Mira mi vestido lindo, qué bonita yo. Look at my pretty dress. Look how pretty am I. And so the children would translate from one to the other with the Flaca Calaca. And in her journals, we found that my mom had become very skinny. She had become very thin. At this point, there were so many mouths to feed. And so one of the punishments that she received for her acting out at school was that she was not going to be fed. And so she writes that there was a nickname for her at home, and it was La Flaca Calaca. And I don't know if it was meant to be malicious. It was a nickname that her mom had, my abuela had for her. And I don't know if it was meant to be mean, but I think nicknames can have that double entendre. Sometimes you don't mean for them to be hurtful, but they hit home. And so I do think that this nickname kind of wounded her a little bit. And so when we read that in the journal, we realized that the Flaca Calaca was actually a secret self-portrait, that Rocio was La Flaca Calaca. And she was kind of in her way, I don't know if she did this intentionally or not, but she really did flip her script, that this nickname and being this skinny Mexican kid who was having all these trouble with English, you know, she was going to make that a tool to help other bilingual education teachers to become the teacher that she needed when she was younger. And so the Flaca, for me, it seems like a symbol of just that, turning your own story around, and that we all have the power to do that.
Yeah, and especially the art that you were describing earlier, which, you know, I have seen it. It's almost, you know, charcoal, smudgy, very dark. And yet the Flaca Calaca, it's bright, it's yellow, it's pink. There's color there. So there is that light you were talking about earlier.
Yes, yes, it is. I actually hadn't put that all the way together the way that you said it now, but it's true. The last two things that she did, because she started to doodle like with iPad, like my dad would help her kind of do this digital art, which is a new form for her, but she has that one and also a self-portrait that she has a little light in her eyes, you know,
and bright and a red bit of lips, color. Right?
Bright red lips and almost like a little sparkle in her eye. And so she barely made it, you know, by the time that she was teaching, she was already sick and battling cancer, you know, but she did at the very end kind of flip her script all the way around, and she became the teacher that she needed when she was younger. And we did share some of the little notes that her students wrote to her about how hard it was to learn, but that they could do it and that they loved her for teaching them, even though they were challenged. It really is a symbol of turning your story around.
So how did that performance go? What was the reaction that you received?
Wow. There are a lot of pros and cons to only having one shot. And for budget and all of the venue and all of the things, we had to have one really good run of it. Which
one and done. That's pressure.
You only get one shot. And gosh, it went so well. I mean, you know, of course, like little things go wrong or like tiny things. But for the most part, I just remember thinking like, at this point, I don't even care if it's good or if it's bad. I just want to tell the story effectively. That's the most important thing. And I was received very well. I remember walking on stage and just, I didn't expect it, but the entire audience applauded. We packed the house with almost 90 people. I had 60 on the books when I started, so we had almost 100 people there. So the house was packed, every seat filled. And when I was done, everybody was crying. I mean, everybody was crying. And I was supposed to have a plática discussion afterwards, but everyone pummeled me with their own individual plática discussions that I never made it to the stool. My mother-in-law was there with her mother, and she said, you know, oh my gosh, my mom would be really mean to me too, you know, and I was really, you know, and so we had people unpacking. A father that I know told me, gosh, you know, when you decided to be bad and rebel, like I can remember my daughter, man, I would go follow her and sneak in the bushes to spy on her. And then I would run home and pretend to be asleep on the couch so she didn't know. And just kind of all of these things that happen between parent and child. Everybody had a relatable story. And I did have an opportunity to set some notebooks out in the space, and I let people know, you know, if you don't want to talk or you don't feel like you have time to talk, you know, you can go sit in this. It was kind of like a cafe environment on the side of the stage. And I told them that they could turn in their assignment at the end. And people did it. I got some very, very private thoughts about family and about family trauma and about self-worth. I'm going to like get a little misty talking about it. But people wrote me some very intimate yellow notebook assignments. And so it was received very well. I don't think that there was a dry eye in the house. And of course, we want to do it again. I had a costume piece that didn't make it onto the stage. You know, I didn't use a director this time, which by the end, I really wish that I had used a director. I had direction in other workshop versions, so I was transposing a lot of staging, you know, and so always we get to hope that we can do it again and even more effectively. But this one went off. I mean, I couldn't have asked for more.
You know, what I think is really interesting, what you were saying, that everybody had a relatable story. You know, you think that a story that is so unique to you, you don't realize how many roots it's going to sprout and how many people it's really going to touch.
You know, that theme came full circle. I had a high school teacher who's still here in town. His name is Andrew Thornton. And I remember telling him, as an actor, or when I make my acting choices, I don't want to be specific. I don't want to be too specific because I want the story to be universal. And he told me the specific becomes universal. The more specific that you become, the more connected that you are, the more people will relate to your story. And he told me that when I was in high school and he was at my show. And it is so true. You know, you would think that my specific story about my mom's chicken and her history with a rooster would be like the strangest, you know, specific story. Every single time I do this, somebody says, gosh, I have a family trauma story about a rooster. And it's so weird. I mean, some people have told me, my projection artist, actually, the gentleman who animated the art, when we first sat down, I knew that we were going to work together for a couple of reasons, just synchronicity reasons. But he said, you know, my family has a story about a rooster.
Right now, everybody's asking, we need to hear the story about the rooster. So what's the story about the rooster?
It is a little controversial because some of my family is not ready to reconcile what was the truth or what was not the truth. And just because Rocio wrote it in her journal from her perspective, and of course we know those things that happen as a child maybe seemed something that they weren't, right? So I'll preface with that. But my mom had a pet rooster that she loved very, 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 very much. And during this time when food was being withheld from her, where she was having to hide bruises on her going to school because of what was happening at home, she came home one day and her rooster is dead. And that she found the head and the feet. She writes, "My rooster is gone. Soon I will be too." And it's so sad the way that she writes that. I don't know if she thought that her mom was going to end her life or that she was going to end her own life. It's not clear. You know, we see this story in the Yellow Notebook, but it connected for me just this very bizarre moment in my life when I came home in high school and my mom had that day. She was teaching in Somerset, just south of San Antonio. And so she would do this commute down there and there's a bunch of farmland out there. And so my mother pulled her minivan over on the side of the road and chased down a chicken that was on the side of the road, put it in her minivan, and then came home with it. But with no explanation, I came home, and my mom is just sitting there with this look on her face, with no excuses. And the chicken is just like pecking around on the couch above her, and she doesn't say anything about it. And so I'm standing there like, are we going to talk about the chicken in the room? And so it was a long, awkward silence. And I finally said, like, Mom, what's happening with the chicken in the living room? And she looked at me and she said, Georgetta, this is my chicken. I brought it home to my house and I'm allowed because I can do whatever I want. So there. And we never asked any more questions about chicken. Oh, we now had a pet chicken. You know, it took us a little while to figure out where she found it and why, but we had a chicken and the chicken was outside with the dog and the dog and the chicken were our pets and nobody was going to say if and or but about it. But when we read the story about the rooster in the Yellow Notebook, it's like, this is what happened. She was reclaiming her pet because now this is her house. And if she wants to have her chicken, no one can take it away from her. And so I've heard so many people talk about their family rooster, their family chicken, especially in Latinx families, that they all have a relatable chicken or a rooster story.
It's interesting, you know, your mom tells you these things and you just accept them for what they are. And so I'm curious as to how it felt when you realized after the fact, after she died, and you read what's in her journals, oh, that's what was going on. What were your feelings? Was there guilt? Was there understanding? Was there sort of a revelation? I'm curious to know how you processed all that.
Definitely. You know, all my life, I struggled with whether or not my mom really had love for me. She showed it in a very harsh way. And I questioned that about our relationship quite a bit, whether or not she was ever proud of me, whether or not she liked me. And I recognized that looking through the journals and the notebooks and realizing her story was that she didn't know how to show love in a warm and tender sense. She hadn't experienced that as a child. And the way that she was going to show her love is pushing me to be always better, right? Always trying to encourage me to be the best and never really truly being satisfied with me. And so I took that very personally growing up. She must not like me. She's not like this with my siblings. Why is this relationship? She's not like this with my father. Why is this relationship with me different than with everybody else? And so I learned through the journals, you know, like I learned that my mother had a very deep love for me and that for all of these reasons, right? How much opportunity I had, how well spoken in English I was. I could see how all of that kind of resentment subconsciously, especially when you're dealing with mental health issues, because when you have this unresolved trauma, it manifests everywhere. And it wasn't that my mom didn't love me. It's that she really didn't know how to love herself. She didn't really know how to show love to others because it had never really been shown to her. And when I saw this painful past, I did have a huge reconciliation because when she died, we hadn't fully come to terms about our past, about our relationship. And we had started to talk about it a little bit, but we truly ran out of time. I wrote a little poem about it, and it's in the closing of my show. But when I examined her art through my art, we built a bridge. And so I wrote a story about the bridge.
And what about your brand new baby? How are you going to approach telling him about Rocío?
Oh my. Well, we have a flaca. The original flaca calaca illustration is up above his crib. So Rocío is always watching him. That's one of the reasons, that's one of my motivations for writing this story down as well, because I don't want him to find out the story of his abuela and I in my closet after I'm gone. And so I did want to make a record of that history and that experience with her. I think it's very important to share our stories. I think when I consider the taboo of the rooster in my family and how it's not to be talked about, it's a huge point of contention. And I think that people can process trauma in all kinds of different ways, right? But there can be a culture in immigrant parents and immigrant families that maybe we don't talk about the past, or the ugly parts of the past didn't exist. It was flowers and rainbows and we were all happy and that's the end of it. And maybe that's not unique to immigrant families. Maybe that's all families of generations, right? The skeletons that we have in our closets. And I think that creates an unrealistic expectation for the future generations, right? That when we share our stories and when we are open about our struggles, about our mistakes, the next generation can learn from them. My hope is that I can be open with my son and be able to share with him the reality of family and history, and all things are both good and bad. that we all make mistakes and that we all have darkness, and that the more honest that we can be about that with our children, the more we can prepare them for the challenge of life. And I did have some preteen and teen audience members, anywhere from probably 14 to college age, both from my family and old students of mine. And it was very interesting because I kind of prefaced their parents and let them know, you know, some of the things we're talking about are we're talking about in home abuse and school abuse, it can get a little dark. And I just want to make sure that you're okay with that subject material being approached with your children. And they were like, thank you so much. And it was so interesting because I heard that there were some very interesting conversations in the car on the way home. And one of the families told me, you know, my kids tell me that they see people at school, kids who are mean or kids that are weird. And we talked about this story about how sometimes people have something darker going on at home and they don't know how to behave in that environment. And so when you see someone that is struggling for whatever reason, that we have to stop and think, there must be something else going on. And so I think I want to teach that to my son. Everybody is having their own experience. And when mom is having a hard time or when dad is having a hard time, that we can be open in our family about what those things are so that he doesn't, because children have this way of like taking all the blame on themselves. It's just their nature. We think we're protecting our children. We don't want them to see that part, or, you know, we want to protect him from this. Children make their own, they're very smart. They make their own assumptions and they will assume the worst of themselves. And so the more that we can be, that I can be open in my family and vulnerable with him, which is a risk, right? I want my son to think that I'm perfect and that all of my decisions are perfect. And they're not. And they're
never going to figure that out later. Yeah,
they'll figure that out later. Yes. So I hope that I can have a level of accountability with my relationship. Easier said than done, because he doesn't even talk yet. You know, so like we'll see. Check back in 10 years to see how I'm doing.
Georgette Maria Mesa is the writer and producer of the one-woman theater piece, La Flaca Calaca. Mesa tells the story of her mother, Rocio Alvarado Lockwood, a native of the border who expressed her childhood trauma in her later artworks and writings. They were works discovered after Rocio's death in 2015. La Flaca Calaca is an effort to heal the scars of intergenerational trauma and to help others coping with trauma know that they're not alone. The show was performed May 16, 2024 at the Brick at Blue Star Arts Complex in San Antonio. See some video from the May 16th performance and examples of Rocio's art at tpr.org. Thanks for joining us today for Fronteras. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez and Maria Navarro. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. Hear past episodes at tpr.org and on the Fronteras podcast. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.